This afternoon, we are allowing the department to present its annual report to us. I'm going to hand over to the acting DG, who will introduce the team and then do the presentation. Over to you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Chair. I'll start with myself. My name is Mbule Lochanga, and I'm the acting Director General in the Department of Human Settlements, and I'm accompanied by my colleague. Sitting next to me is Neville Chin, who is acting in the department. His position is Deputy Director General. Strategy and planning in the department. Next to him is the acting chief financial officer, Mr. Nyame Kumbergo. Then we have head of policy and research, Dr. Zolega Sokopo. Behind Dr. Sokopo on the far, on the right, we have Tapelo Mashabane, who is heading internal audit in the department, and we have Nofundo Nozikwava, who is heading strategic planning components within the department. There are other officials. We have Richard Johnson in my office, then there's Ikelen Kumalo, who is in the strategic planning component as well, and those are the officials who are here from the department. There are CEOs of the entities who are observing, but their day is tomorrow and they will introduce themselves. And that's it from the side of the department, Chair.
Thank you very much. And we're also aware that there is officials from the ministry that are here as well. Both ministers' office and the CM's office, I know that they are represented. I hope by now you know all of us, but we don't mind introducing ourselves over and over again. My name is Nopsawe Maku, chairing this committee.
Good afternoon, my name is Lungim Ganga Sabashe, CDC member.
Good afternoon, Chair. Good afternoon, officials. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Humphrey Mmemezi. I'm the member of the portfolio.
And
good afternoon, Chair, and ladies and gentlemen. My name is Lancelot Ndumiso Thapa, member of this committee. And the Christian name.
Afternoon, Makashile Ghana, an ordinary member of the committee.
Good afternoon. Welcome back, Honorable
Ketamaba. We know that in the morning, during the morning session, you were at public work. But now you are here. And Honorable Dumiso Thapa, in the afternoon, the name changes to Lancelot. So don't get confused. It's the same person. But in the morning, he becomes Dumiso, then in the afternoon, he becomes Lancelot. But it's the same person. Thank you very much. Then over to you, FPG. We are all here.
Thank you, Chair. It's proper, Chair, to state up front that we have had a series of engagements with the Auditor General and the Public Service Commission on the work of the department. Those engagements were all intended to enhance the quality of the work that the department is entrusted to do. We've structured our presentation as follows. We will give you an overview of the performance of the department as a whole. We will talk about the expenditure versus the performance, what we usually call the non-financial and financial performance indicators. We will also talk about the departmental performance, the program. We will look at the sector as a whole. You'll recall that we are contracted to deliver certain 5-year targets in this current term of government. We will cover that, and we'll also look at the grant expenditure report. We'll deal with financial matters and audit outcomes. This is how we structured our presentation. So in summary, the overall performance of the department based on the annual performance plan. Remember, in the beginning of the year, we in the APP, we contract to achieve a certain target. In this case, we contracted to deliver 146 targets. This is our annual target. And we achieved 102, which means that 44 of those 146 targets were not achieved, which gives us a 70% target, actual target. So in simple language, we didn't meet our target. We only achieved 70% of what we contracted to achieve in the beginning of the year. You can disaggregate that and break it down by program, or if you like, you can break it down by branches. But it's always better to break it down by programs, because in the APP we use programs and not branches. Program 1, which is your admin program, target that were approved in the APP is 46. We contracted to deliver 46 targets in the APP, and we achieved 34 out of that 46, which means 12 is not achieved. In the human settlements planning, strategy component, which is program 2, policy component, we had 46 targets, and 24 achieved, 21 not achieved. In fact, the exact figure is 22 there, it's not 21. So 22 targets were not achieved out of 46 targets. In your support program, which is program 3, and this is arguably the most important program, because it talks to delivery on the ground. We contracted to deliver 40,000 targets, to achieve 40,000 targets, and we only achieved 32, and we missed 8 not achieved. In the development finance section, which is program 4, we contracted to deliver 14 targets, and we achieved 12, and 2 not achieved. The HDF, which is program 4, development finance component, is the administration of the grants. It's disbursement of the grants to various entities, the expenditure of the grants. That's what that program is all about. So overall, we started the year with 146 targets. We achieved 102, and 44 targets were not met. You can present the same picture graphically as well, but this time, we're doing it by quarter. In quarter 1, we were sitting at 79% of what we were supposed to achieve in that first quarter. Second quarter, 74%. In third quarter, 69%. And in the fourth quarter, we achieved 72%. And this averages out at 70%. That's the annual target. Now, you can also put it in numbers. It's the same picture, but we put it in numbers now, from classical presentation to the actual numbers. In program 1, the allocation was 454 million, and the expenditure was 447 million, with a variance of 7,161,000. Which means that we spent about 98% of what we contracted to achieve. And this is the financial target. Same with on the non-financial side, we've already touched on this, that we contracted to deliver 46, and we achieved 34, and 12 was not achieved, which represents a target of 74 in program one. So what we're trying to do with this slide is to show both the financial and non-financial indicators, the two most which are the all the times. What did the money buy? So if you have not achieved the targets, what did you do about the money? I think those are some of the questions that we deal with most of the time when you don't meet our targets. If you look at the next program, which is program two, human settlements, policy, strategy, and planning, the final allocation was 80 million in 79. Expenditure was 78 million. The variance was 1,314. This represents 98% of the target. And you can see that the on the financial side, this program did well. But on the non-financial side, this program didn't do well at all. They started the year, program two started at 46 again, and 24 targets were achieved, and 22 were not achieved, which represents 52% performance. Program three, 168 million rands. They spent 119 million with a variance of 49, and this represents 70% expenditure. On the non-financial side, we have 80% targets achieved. Only 8 targets were not achieved. Now, it's important to state that, I've said this in the beginning, that arguably, Program 3 is the most important program for us because it talks directly to support, it talks directly to delivery, it talks to construction of houses, service sites, it talks to support to municipalities and provinces. So this is an important program if we want to make sure that this program, this budget performs. Number four is the disbursement function. As you can see, we had a budget of 28 billion rands. That 28 billion rands is what we disbursed to entities, to municipalities, to provinces. So the 28 billion rands, all of it was spent. Now, our minister always asks this question, that it's well and good to say you have disbursed the grants. Question is, what did it buy? Did you achieve the targets that you wanted to achieve in the beginning of the year? Because the bulk of those targets that the 28 billion rands is buying are in the provinces and they are in the municipalities, which is why the role of Program 3 players is so important. On the non-financial side, you can see that they have achieved 86%. And this gives you clearly the financial side. On the financial side, we look good in terms of expenditure, but on the non-financial side, we don't look good at all. There are other qualitative targets as well that we delivered during the course of the year. We refer to these as outreach programs. The department implemented consumer education targeting beneficiaries across various programs. The department also implemented community outreach programs with the executive authority. We will talk about some of those. The rollout was done in partnership with municipalities, provinces, and human settlement entities. A publication on the 20-year progress of the department in implementing the housing and human settlements mandate was published in the year under review. In terms of human settlement strategic support, we finalized the MTSF, which is the 5-year target that talked to this current term of government. We presented the MTSF here, the MTSF targets. We did four evaluations of four key focus areas. And this includes the urban settlements grant, asset creation integrated residential development program. These are some of the programs that we evaluated during the year under review. The USDG policy was also developed and circulated for inputs to all the stakeholders. We presented it to the foresight committees, and they recommended that it needs to be submitted for CIAS, which was done. The drafting of the white paper commenced We've been consulting with all the stakeholders. The intention here is to move from the housing paper, what we call the housing white paper, to the human settlements white paper, from the Housing Act to the Human Settlements Act. So once we've concluded the entire process, we will have what will be called the Human Settlements Act, instead of operating from the Housing Act. You know, there are limitations with the current Housing Act. A set of ministerial directives have been compiled with specific references, reference to ensuring improved focus on spending related to MTSF outcomes. We've written to provinces and we've asked provinces to scale down on rectification. We need to keep the balance right, because you can't rectify at scale and still be able to deliver on your MTSF targets. We've written to provinces to and ask them to stick to the policies, because we've seen some policy deviations in some provinces. There were directives that Minister issued in the beginning of the year, and we discussed those directives with all the AGOGs and the MCs. Monitoring and evaluation tax assessment policy and implementation framework for the sector was developed and approved in the year under review last year. Chair, it's also important to state that a total of 12,533 PHP units were delivered in the year under review. And this was done in 5 provinces. But we just want to highlight that out of that 12,533 PHP units, 4,000 of those were delivered in Etchikwini municipality. And they're talking directly to the upgrading of informal settlements. And in collaboration with KZN province, cooperative model of delivery was undertaken in the Vulindela Rural PHP. This is one mega project which will deliver in excess of plus minus 25,000 housing opportunities. And that project is a good project, Chair. There are challenges, but those challenges are not insurmountable. We're managing them. But it is a good case study for managing all of our initiatives, the youth cooperatives, women cooperatives, getting people to be involved in the construction of their own houses. The department also commenced with a partnership with the Department of Small Business Development in establishing housing cooperatives. We've signed a memorandum of agreement with the Department of Small Business Development. We need to operationalize that MOA. The involvement of the youth in the delivery of PHP projects was undertaken through the Youth Brigade program in the Western Cape, KZN, and Eastern Cape. Some of the young people, almost 200 of them, are in the first stage right now as we speak, going through some of the training courses that we have developed for them. The social contract in line with the MTSF target was concluded with a number of social partners, including the entities, the private sector. This was done in October last year. On the 16th and 17th of October, we signed a partnership with social partners. Yesterday, we had a meeting with the Banking Association of South Africa to operationalize some of the aspects of that social contract, and all the major banks were in that workshop. The MOU between the department and the NHBRC was signed for the rollout of Youth Brigade program. We asked NHBRC, which is one of our entities, to assist us in administering and managing this youth program, so that we become more structured in managing all the youth initiatives. The department currently doesn't have all the capacity to manage this program in a professional way. So we signed an agreement with NHBRC to assist us in creating a structure to manage the youth program. An agreement with Service CETA and Construction CETA regarding the implementation of mentorship for the youth prepared to have concluded. We signed that agreement with the two CETAs, Department of Higher Education and Training, NYDA. We have the draft MOU. We drafted an MOU with them, which was consulted widely, and it was concluded last month. On the international relations front, Chair, we've got the South African Human Settlements position paper for the UN Habitat Conference. It was prepared and presented in September this year. The department led the South African delegation to the World Urban Forum 7 in Medina, in Colombia. This was in April 2014. A discussion paper on urbanization in South Africa was prepared and presented at the conference. The agreement with the Netherlands government on social housing was extended until June 2015. We'll be having a workshop with them this coming Friday to conclude that agreement. You will recall, Chair, that the Netherlands government made available some resources for us to manage this program, to manage the social housing program in South Africa. In fact, our model is also modeled against the Dutch social housing program. Cuba continued cooperation on utilizing the CTAs, what we call the Cuban technical experts. We've recruited some, they are deployed in the Free State as we speak. I was there to welcome them more than a month ago. We have an agreement, a cooperation with Denmark. We'll be handing over houses on Friday with the presidency. And you'll see some of the solar geyser panels that we've put on the N2 Gateway project. Those solar geyser panels were funded by the Danish government. There are quite a number of lessons that we have documented from that exercise. In the continent, Chair, the housing and urban development on the continent has been formally institutionalized after the African Union through the establishment of the Specialized Technical Committee on Public Service, Local Government, Urban Development, and Decentralization. This is what used to be referred to as AMCOT. We've managed this process. The DDG stakeholder relations attended all of the workshops in this regard. The National Upgrading Support Program, you would have realized that Program 3, we had challenges with the expenditure on Program 3. This program didn't perform very well on the budgeting side, but on the non-financial side, the NAS program has performed. I think all what is expected at this stage is for us to adopt an aggressive approach to get the municipalities to implement those plans. It's not enough to package the plans on upgrading of informal settlements. We would want the councils to adopt those plans so that they can be implemented. As you know, Chair, it takes us a little bit of time. In fact, some issue like it will take you up to 6 or 7 years to upgrade an informal settlements program. So what we've done as the Department of Human Settlements is to invest in packaging those programs, in packaging those projects. What we do with this program, we count the dwellings in informal settlements. We do geotech assessments. We send our professionals to do geotech assessments. We count the beneficiaries. We do pre-screening. And then we package the plans for upgrading an informal settlement. If it's not upgraded where it is, we will then make recommendations as to how to relocate communities to other greenfields projects that will be utilized to absorb people who are coming from informal settlements. Not all informal settlements are upgradable where they are. So this program, the National Upgrading Support Program, is intended to help us to create a pipeline of informal settlements upgrading projects. We've also taken 20 million rands out of that budget and we've given it to HDA, and Treasury supported us in this regard, for HDA to prioritize the mining towns, the packaging of informal settlement upgrading plans in the mining towns. It is a common feature in all the 21 mining towns, is a sprawl of informal settlements. So we felt that HDA can assist us in packaging those plans and deliver them to municipalities and to provinces for upgrading. We've developed 31 municipal informal settlement strategies and upgrading programs. We are present in 336 informal settlements. In other words, we've developed 336 settlement level informal settlements plan. And this helps us to assist municipalities. It does not help to criticize municipalities and state the obvious that municipalities do not have capacity. The question is, what do you do to assist municipalities to upgrade informal settlements and to package the plans? And this is what we are doing. And our presence is in 62 municipalities as we speak, because that's where the majority of informal settlements are. The material for the introduction to informal settlements upgrading course was piloted and completed. This talks to what we call the knowledge products and services. As we upgrade informal settlements, we need to come up with what we would call a standard operating procedure for upgrading an informal settlement. So the lesson that we are gathering out of this exercise, which will leave it to municipalities so that in the long run, municipalities are able to do these things themselves. So we've got an upgrading manual. We've got courses that we are running for councillors and for municipal officials. In this current financial year, we're targeting to extend the NASP team, the core NASP team. We will be upgrading that, extending that team and upscaling on the team. We do have the budget to increase the output and the expenditure. I think the expenditure will improve. Currently, we have a small team. We spent some time discussing with Treasury whether we can appoint officials in-house to manage this instead of utilizing professional consultants or engineering consulting firms. But the conditions of the grant in the last financial year didn't allow us to appoint contract personnel within the department. But we've talked to Treasury about this, and we've managed to find each other. And the sector delivery targets, this is what we present to cabinets on a quarterly basis, and we present it to you as well. And you will see that there are areas that are still not performing. These are your five-year targets, your MTSF targets. That's what constitutes your 1.5 million housing opportunities target. The first one, again, it is about increasing adequate housing through the subsidy and affordable housing segment. In other words, here the target is 745,000 households that we are targeting to improve adequate housing in informal settlements and other areas. The annual target for this was 149,000. We delivered 120,000, which represents 80% of the annual target. The next one is more about the provision of basic services. This is up to phase three, not phase two. I think we'll have to correct that. This says 750 households in informal settlements must be upgraded up to phase three, which means that you should be able to provide a higher level of service, sanitation services, water services in the informal settlements. Phase three is about the provision of basic services. It excludes the provision of infrastructure. So in all of our informal settlements in the country, you can argue that there is no informal settlement in the country that is not serviced. What is the problem is the level of service in that informal settlement, because if you have a ratio of 1:30, one service point or one sanitation service point servicing 30 households, you will agree with me that the capacity of that service point will not last for too long, because you want to reduce the ratio. Where we want to be is to have a one-on-one. In other words, for every household, there must be a waterborne sanitation point. There must be an in-house water service. That's where we want to be. But there are EHP, emergency housing standards, and there are RDP standards that we prioritize in areas where there are no services, and the approach is incremental. So the target here is to provide services up to phase three, and we're using the two grants, HSDG and the USDG. And again, we had an annual target of 150,000, and we delivered 74,000 households in informal settlements. And this represents 49.3% of the annual target. And the last one is 563,000 individual units for subsidized or subsidy housing submarket. That is the 5-year target. This is your full subsidized component. And the annual target is 112. And this is your BMG house that you are building there, with an annual target of 112,600 individual units. Last year we delivered 95,000. For the first time in the history of human settlements, we delivered less than 100,000 tall structures. We had a target of 112,600 and we delivered 95,210. And that represents 84% of the annual target. Affordable housing loans for new houses in the affordable housing submarket. We have a target there of 110,000 loans. 70,000 of that is SLIFT and 40,000 of that is GFI support. The annual target of 22,000 loans granted. We 62,952 loans, incremental loans, were issued by GFIs, and that represents 25,117 houses. We were asked to convert the loans because some of the loans are not necessarily translated into a full house. So we were asked to do that conversion so that we get to know how many housing opportunities that we're getting out of this, because the 110,000 loans, it's not 110,000 loans that we're targeting for, 110,000 housing opportunities, which is a 5-year target. Now you can see that we targeted to deliver 22,000 housing opportunities, not just loans, and we delivered 26,000 in the last financial year. The 50 catalytic projects implemented and demonstrating spatial, social, and economic integration, and again, that is a 5-year target. Annual target is 10 catalytic projects. To date, we have appraised 160, we have received, in fact, to be exact, we received 160 proposals from the provincial departments, provincial and municipal and municipalities, plus the private sector. We received 160 proposals from them. We have appraised all of them. We've done the shortlisting of about 77 catalytic projects, which will have to be implemented up to 2019. But the target in this current term of government is to implement 5 catalytic projects, and that's our contractual obligation in these 5 years. And we're comfortable that we will meet that target. Already some of the projects in the 77 catalytic projects that we will be announcing are at an implementation stage. We can give you the exact of how many catalytic projects are still under planning and how many catalytic projects that are under implementation. So we're confident that we'll be able to meet the 5-year target. The number of informal settlements assessed, we do the assessments. You have to do proper assessments, which would include your geotech assessments. In this 5-year period, counting the dwellings, checking whether the soil conditions are correct for upgrading the informal settlements. We have an annual target of 460 informal settlements to be assessed in 2014-2015. In collaboration with the HDA, we did 816 informal settlements just for the assessment in 62 municipalities. Of these, 503 are detailed settlement plans that are being developed. What we are expecting is that municipalities have to adopt these plans. We have to present them to the council of all the 62 municipalities for adoption, because these are plans that will inform construction downstream. The investment decisions in human settlements improve spatial efficiency. This is more about coming up with the investment framework. This is what we call the master spatial planning, which was concluded, presented to MINMEC. We still have to present it to cabinet. The biggest criticism against human settlements over the years was that human settlements is building rows of houses everywhere in the periphery of town. We look for cheap land in the periphery of town and build houses. And they the a lot of practitioners in the industry, they felt that this is not sustainable in the long run. You're creating an urban sprawl, which will be extremely difficult to service in the long run. We need to target our investments wisely. We don't just build houses everywhere where we see a greenfield piece of land. And that's why we came up with the master spatial planning or the investment framework, which is really managed for us. And I think we can tick the internal boxes and see we presented it to MINMEC, we presented it to Minister, signed off. The only outstanding leg is a presentation to Cabinet for Cabinet to adopt it. 563,000 permits issued to new homeowners in the subsidy submarket and bedrock eradicated. The 563,000 is linked to the subsidy target for the next 5 years. You can see that in the previous slide, we talked about 563 fully subsidized houses. We're saying that as we issue and deliver houses in this current financial year, we also, in this 5 year term of government, we also need to make sure that we deliver those title deeds. Because if you don't deliver the title deeds, you are creating a new backlog. In the last financial year, we had a target of delivering 112,600 title deeds. We had that backlog. This is new backlog. But we only delivered 59,029 title deeds, which means that we didn't meet our targets. We issued 59,000 for the old backlog and 32,750 for the new development. So you have two types of backlog. You have the pre-1994 and you have the post-1994. In terms of the post-1994, the new targets, you have 32,750, which was achieved last year, and then for the pre and post, the old backlog, the so-called old backlog, you deliver 26,000, which gives you 59 in total. So this is one area which remains red, and it hasn't changed. When you go to cabinet, the cabinet has raised some concerns about the performance of this particular component. We're managing it with our sister organization, EAB. My colleague, Neville Cheney, we are driving this program. And the biggest challenge here is that, one, it's the funding, because no new allocation or new funding has been made available for this particular exercise. And two, it is the capacity of the provinces and municipalities to manage this the way it's supposed to be managed. The capacity varies from province to province. Gauteng has a full conveyancing unit that deals with title deeds. Other provinces don't have that arrangement. They leave it to the developers and the contractors to manage it. If you have not issued the title deed, it means you have not concluded that project. And you cannot provide a closeout report, because a title deed is the last stage of delivery. If you run an IRTP project, there are about 199 steps. The 199 steps is the issuance of the title deed. So this is important, because communities and beneficiaries will not be able to leverage on this asset to get funding to send kids to school if they don't own the house. So they need to own this house. So this is a very strategic target, and we're putting all the efforts to get it to perform. The other target is the acquisition of land, which is managed by HDA. And the five-year target is that 10,000 hectares of well-located land, not just any land. Well-located land should be rezoned and released for new developments, targeting poor and lower middle-income households. In the year under review, 2,000 hectares of well-located land was rezoned and released for new developments, targeting poor and lower middle-income households. We got the list, and I think in one of the portfolio committee meetings, SDA made a presentation on some of the land parcels that they have acquired and rezoned. And that target is, to date, the target was, in the last financial year, the target was 2,685. NHBRC enrollment, this target is also important for quality assurance and verification of performance. NHBRC has 200 and
more than 200 inspectors countrywide. They have offices all over the country. When we want to verify or to do project level verification, we rely on those inspectors. We rely on inspection reports, and we rely on project level verification, because our monitoring and evaluation team cannot visit and verify all the projects that are currently running. We have plus minus 12,000 active projects countrywide, and we rely on NHPRC in some instances to give us those inspection reports, because once they have inspected all the houses, NHPRC has to issue a warranty for those houses. 178 projects representing 66,241 houses were inspected in the last financial year. The number of municipalities accredited with housing function, its five-year target is 6 municipalities will be assessed for accreditation. Now you will recall that we reviewed the accreditation process. Accreditation, without looking at performance issues, becomes a compliance exercise. In the accreditation framework that we utilize, we never looked at those performance issues. We don't accredit for the sake of accrediting. We accredit because we want to get municipalities and metros to perform. And accreditation, when it started, it was packaged as a hands-on support program or a hands-on capacity building program. So here, we changed tact. And in changing tact, we needed to inform all the stakeholders. The accreditors, in this case, the people who accredit, who actually do the accreditation and sign an accreditation, is the MECs themselves. And the MECs wanted to be given more time to study this particular exercise. There was a report that we received from all the metros, and the minister took a conscious decision to review that process. So that's why we ended up dispersing the capacity building grant in April last year, because the capacity building grant was meant to support the program. So we changed tact to make sure that the accreditation program is not a box-ticking exercise. It's not a compliance exercise. For instance, if you look at the performance of the two metros in the last financial year, Ekurhuleni and the city of Cape Town, we have received two rollovers in two successive years. You can't just accredit and ignore poor performance. So those are some of the issues that we wanted to deal with. And again, the new approach that we are packaging is accreditation by doing. It's not accreditation by throwing money into the problem with the hope that the problem will go away. So it's a hands-on support program, which is what we started in Nelson Mandela Bay. The other target that we have for the five-year plan is the number of affordable rental housing opportunities to be provided. The target here is 27,000 affordable rental opportunities. And we delivered 7,400 rental opportunities. And the bulk of these are CRUs, because the social housing component didn't meet its targets. For instance, we delivered 2,696 units, which represents 49.5% of the annual targets. And the state land social housing opportunities were delivered. This is the 2,696 talks to that. The other 2,117 is CRU, and that represents almost 100% of the annual target. So here we didn't perform very well. We understand some of the challenges. We'll come back to it. The performance of the institution, the social housing institution, the social housing regulatory authority. We had a long two-day session on Sunday and on Monday discussing the pipeline of projects, and we're still convinced that we'll be able to meet that target, the 27,000 housing opportunities that we need to deliver by 2019. It's also important to state that in this current year, there will be some shifts in the budget, because we have have not performed well in the first quarter of this current financial year. Increasing the volume of home loans granted by private sector and DFIs, and the target there is 116,448 if you include the private home loans. And again, in the last financial year, we didn't meet the target. We achieved 76% of what we conducted to do. Now, coming to the grants performance, you will be very familiar with this part because we presented it to you in the fourth quarter results. We covered this part as well. This simply tells you how provinces have performed, how provinces have spent the 17 billion rand grant voted funds. If you look at Eastern Cape, they spent 100%, Free State 100%, Gauteng 100%. Now, don't worry too much about this part because this is the financial aspect of it. Where you would want to spend more time is on the non-financial. The question is, what did the money buy? They may have spent 100%, what did it buy? So we're simply demonstrating this slide that all the provinces, they almost spend 100%. You may be asking a question. KZN with 3,000, they overspent by 3,200. Why do you still report as 100%? Because the budget is 3.5 billion rand. So that 3 million becomes so insignificant that it won't show. You simply round it up to the nearest decimal point. Gauteng, 99%, and again, you may want to note Gauteng that they have an under expenditure of 25 million. But also, Gauteng didn't do well on the non-financial side. Maybe we should go straight to the non-financial indicators. If you look at the non-financial indicators, Eastern Cape started the year with a target of 10,000 store structures. 10,000 set aside and 14,000 top structures. This is what they contracted with us to deliver in 2014-2015 financial year. And the total delivery by Eastern Cape was 26,050, which means that Eastern Cape, in terms of set aside, they delivered 12,581 sites. They overachieved on the site, and on the top structures, they delivered 13,469 top structures. So if you look at Eastern Cape didn't do badly in the last financial year. And Eastern Cape, if you look at the financial and non-financial indicators, the two are talking to each other. I'm not going to go through all of them, but I'll just highlight the good performers and the poor performers. If you look at Limpopo, you'll notice that Limpopo, they had no target for size. They only contracted to deliver 3,082. You'll recall that Limpopo started the year with a budget of, this is an adjusted budget, the 659. Limpopo's budget in the beginning of the year was 1.3 billion, if my memory says me well. We can verify that. 1.2, but we'll look at the exact figure. We shifted an amount of about 600 million rand plus to a number of provinces that were performing in Limpopo. As you can see, Limpopo in the last financial year, they only delivered 2,000 housing opportunities. Gauteng, this is where we spent almost 25% of the entire allocation. That's where you have your lion's share in Gauteng. But if you look at the figures, there's dismal performance there. By any standard, Gauteng's budget, if you go back and look at Gauteng's budget, which is 4.4 billion rand, but with 4.4 billion rand, you should be giving us more than 40,000 housing opportunities. So there's poor performance there in Gauteng, and we know that some of the money has gone into dealing with some of the disasters that they were faced with. For instance, the Gauteng spent 1.6 billion rand, plus minus 1.6 billion rand, on rectification of asbestos roofs and other hailstorm related activities. And those are opportunities that could have helped us, or the budget that could have helped us to buy new housing opportunities. In fact, they have rectified last minus 14,000 to 15,000 houses that were affected by hailstorm. We're still dealing with that matter because it has affected the performance of Gauteng. In fact, in this current financial year, Gauteng has some serious cash flow challenges because of the problem with the hailstorm and other disaster-related expenditures. Then other provinces, you can see that the only province that has done very well, the two provinces that have done very well in the last financial year is Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal. We're presenting this slide so that you are able to compare the financial and non-financial indicators. We only delivered, if you go back again, in the last financial year, the total delivery was 143,000. And that's not where we started in the beginning of the year, but that's what we achieved, which means that we didn't perform very well in the last financial year. We didn't meet the annual targets that we contracted to deliver in the APP. You can break it down by program. This is FLISP. All what it does, it tells you which province is performing well in terms of FLISP. And if you look at all of them, strangely, even though Gauteng is regarded as the poor performing province overall in the previous slide, but it's the only province that is performing well in terms of FLISP. In fact, even in this current financial year, they have decided to upgrade in terms of the financial linked individual subsidy program. We want this program to perform because this is the program that helps us to deal with your middle income earners, people who earn between 3,500 and 15,000 housing opportunities. So what we want to do is to improve on the administration of this program. In our workshop yesterday with BASA, the Banking Association of South Africa, they made it very clear to us, in fact, Mr. Kubagia has arranged a meeting with the department and the work stream leaders. We have appointed three work stream leaders to look at not only FLISP, but to look at the funding of the gap market as a whole, the lower gap and the upper gap. So we've taken some hard decisions yesterday to get this program and other related programs to perform. The CEO of NHFC is chairing one of the work streams that will help us to look at these issues. Now, rectification, Minister's view on rectification, I know she's not very passionate about rectification. She's of the view that this is throwing good money after the bad. As much as we have to rectify, because there are houses that are falling apart, she's of the view that we need to put more emphasis on creating new opportunities instead of fixing the old ones. And this is how the program performed in the last financial year, and you can see that Eastern Cape is the only province that has put a significant amount of budget on rectification. And we were not very happy about that. We would want to scale down on those numbers because we feel that there's a massive deadlock. We would rather spend more money chasing new targets instead of rectifying old ones. Urban settlement development grant expenditure, I've touched on this, that in the last financial year, if you look at the metro, the challenge that we have with this particular grant is that they are overlapping financial year. It's only proper that you look at the end of the year, which is the 30th of June, how municipalities have performed. The battery is going to die. Thank you. try and move a little bit faster so that if we lose the battery, I don't know, there's something wrong with the power cord. Yeah. Okay. If you look at this, this is Abdel Settlements Development Grant Expenditure at the 31st of March 2015. That's the time when the audit processes were concluded. We should be looking at the 30th of June 2015, because it gives you a fair picture of who has performed. We were sitting at 48.3% at the 31st of March, and we still needed to spend about 51.7% on the 31st of March. And we were all worried, and we still have some worries, some concerns even now. If you look at that picture, and I thought that we have included the 30th of June, because it gives us a fair picture. But even if it's not here, we can summarize it so that you can note it. We were sitting at 48.3%. We ended up spending 93% at the end of June. And that is worrying, because you can't spend 50% in 3 months. Something is just not right. And we picked it up, some of the anomalies. We're just bringing them to our attention because we know them. For instance, you can break it down by city. At the time, there were two cities that were worrying us. It was Ekurhuleni and the city of Cape Town. And these are the two major cities that had massive rollover in the last financial year. Ekurhuleni had a rollover of 188 million. The city of Cape Town had a rollover of 286 million in the last financial year. Now, again, in this year, ending 30th of June, the two metros had big rollovers, City of Cape Town and Ekurhuleni. And it's not surprising, and Cape Town in particular, we were more worried because we're still doing some verification in Cape Town, because they spend about plus minus 400 million rands on one acquisition, which is the purchase of a piece of land in the southeast metro region of Cape Town. So we're still doing some project level verification, because we're not convinced that we should make big transactions towards the end of the financial year. What it does, it signifies a significant level of poor planning. That's basically what it does. But this is one area that we've given it more attention. Because if you consistently spend more, a lot of money more towards the end of the financial year, it tells you that there is a problem in planning, there is a problem in packaging, there is a problem in implementation. And we had a series of meetings with the city of Cape Town and the city of Ekurhuleni. I don't think, Chair, it's necessary to go through this presentation line by line. But that was a presentation on the USDG. I wasn't going to go through every metro. If we can go to, I don't know what's wrong with the computer. It's charged, but it's not charged. We've connected to the cord, but it's refusing to charge. You've got a presentation.
Let the funds is available to take the share. Let them sort it out, but continue to do that. Okay.
after recovery. Chair, we were looking at the municipal performance, the USPG. I don't think it's necessary to go through all of them. But if you look at Buffalo City, you can see that almost all the metros are progressive in their approach in terms of spending the USDG grants, even though they are certain areas. For instance, there were concerns about Buffalo City spending 50 million rand on EPMO, public safety and other support functions. We have 1 million for support services, we have 2 million for public safety, and we have 30 million for EPMO. I think EPMO is not necessarily a bad thing, Chair, because this is what helps you to manage your project performance. This is your back office project management office. You need that to have a clear dashboard of how things are moving. Buffalo City, if you track Buffalo City's performance from 2011 to 2015, you can see that the graph has been going up consistently. Buffalo City in 2011, 2012, they struggled to spend 50% of their allocation. They will only spend about 80% and 40%. But that graph has improved. Again, if you look at other metros as well, you can see that, for instance, Nelson Mandela Bay Metro, in terms of USDG, they're spending the bulk of their allocation. They're spending 207 million on human settlement service and sites. They're spending 343 million on the provision of sanitation services, bulk sanitation services, which is your bulk sewer. And they're spending 208 million on bulk water supply. So the picture doesn't look bad in terms of where they spend the money on. I think municipalities such as Cape Town, the city of Ekurhuleni are the two municipalities that need urgent attention. Currently we feel that all the other cities, we can still manage them. We saw some signs of poor planning in Tswane, and I think we can deal with that. It's not a problem that cannot be managed. Chair, I will then move to step out of USDG and go straight to the municipal capacity grants, what we call the municipal human settlement capacity grants. You are aware that we dispersed these grants in April, in the last financial year, and there were reasons for this. And the only reason why we dispersed these grants in April last year is because we wanted to finalize all the issues around the USDG policy. There's been a big conversation about the USDG, the grant itself, because we introduced this grant without introducing the policy. Normally, you introduce the policy and outline your policy objectives before you approve the grant, because the grant funds policy objectives, not the other way around. Now, the assumption that was made is that the only policy framework that will be used to manage this grant is the MIG or the Mixed Cities Policy, which was not relevant because you have changed the grant parameters. When you moved from Mixed Cities to USDG, it meant that you have changed your policy focus. So you needed a new policy focus. So you introduced the grant in 2011 without introducing the policy. And this is something that is very strange, because you can't be running your policy priorities through your grant framework. Your grant framework has to be informed by your policy parameters. And that's what we're trying to fix right now. Minister has had a series of meetings with the mayors of the eight metros. We have presented the USDG policy. to the foresight committees. It will be going to cabinet anytime now. We were asked to spend a little bit of time with the CS people in the president. And this affected the disbursement of the USDG because the two, of the capacity building grant, because the two have to talk to each other. Now, going forward, it may not be necessary for us to have this grant, because in the policy framework, in the USDG policy framework, we have stated clearly that cities can use up to 5% of their USDG allocation to deal with capacity issues. So it may not be necessary for us to disperse this grant. And again, I must say that we have seen some strange things in the manner this grant is being utilized. In Nelson Mandela Bay Metro, we have a report on that. And in other metros as well, we have seen that there has been a significant increase of the utilization of consultants. And if you utilize the consultants for all of your operations, you are not building your capacity. You're building the capacity of the consultants. So we were worried about this particular problem. And again, it's tantamount to throwing money into the problem with the hope that the problem is going to go away. It's not capacity building in the true sense of the word. Then in terms of job creation, and I'm sure Dr. Kokopo can explain it to us how we arrive at these figures. And these are the figures that we created, the job creation figures that we created in the last financial year. The delivery of 46,847 sites and 93,000 houses. The actual figure is, in fact, we round it up, it's about 95,000 houses in 2014-2015. It created an estimated figure of 50,000 employment opportunities. Dr. Sokopo is a specialist in this thing. She's sitting right here, and she will be able to explain how the model is utilized, and I'll ask her to explain it at the end. In terms of accreditation, Chair, I'll move with speed on this one. Again, an approach was revised. We had broader consultation. We need, once we have finalized the consultation process and everything, we will need to go back to all the parties involved. We need to go back, get SALDA on board, get National Treasury on board, get FFC on board, and get all the stakeholders that we need to consult before the MECs can issue the assignment framework. And again, we will be guided by Minister and the MEC and NINMEC on these matters, because the people who should accredit once the process is concluded is the MECs themselves. And all the MECs unanimously and NINMEC wanted this process to be reviewed, and that's what we are busy with. The total number of municipalities accredited today is 28, which was recorded at the end of the financial year 2013-2014. I've charged on the capacity building grants. We dispersed only to the six metros, and Chair, this is an issue that we raised as well, that we feel that it's probably not a progressive grant, because you're building capacity for metros that are administering in excess of more than 50 billion rand. And you prioritize them for capacity at the expense of Buffalo City and Mangaung. And if you look at last year, we only dispersed to six metros, and we didn't disperse to Buffalo City and Mangaung. If it was a debt, you would say this is a regressive debt. It's rewarding those who should not be rewarded. This year, we've already taken a decision. Already, we have dispersed to Buffalo City and Mangaung, because we feel that these are small metros that need more capacity than your world-class cities such as Johannesburg, Cape Town, and others. But we will be dispersing the 100 million rands to all of them. In fact, I've already signed in this current financial year the 100 million rands, even though the minister is not very comfortable with us doing that, because some of the metros have not spent the entire 300 million rands, because we only dispersed it in April last year. And again, next slide on our human resources. Chair, the corporate services component in the department is the weakest component as we speak. I will be the first one to admit, and I think the challenges are known, that the head of corporate services only came back from suspension almost 3 months ago. She was on suspension for more than 2 years. The director for asset management was on suspension as well for more than 2 years. We had some challenges within corporate services. HR, in this modern day, HR is about the well-being of the organization. It is about managing. That's why most organizations don't refer to HR as HR. They refer to it as people management. We have significant challenges in our HR. This is a standing item in the management meetings. We have a management meeting this evening at 6, the EMG, and HR matters are standing items. It's what we'll be discussing this evening. You will notice that we have approved the five-year HR plan. It was only approved in 2012. And is valid until 2017. But we felt that the HR plan, the five-year HR plan, needs to be aligned with the MPSL. It needs to be aligned with the current term of government. So if it was approved in 2012 and is still valid, it's not aligned with the current term of government. So we're reviewing that so that it talks to what we want to achieve in this current term of government. There's also an annual HR implementation plan. The two things is the five-year HR plan and the annual implementation plan. And now, there's a chapter in this presentation which talks about the vacancies. We have a significant number of vacancies. Now, what I'm going to say may come across as an excuse for not filling the post. If you lose 56 million rands or 54 million rands in 1 year in your operational budget, which is the compensation of employees' budget in 1 year, you are bound to create shocks in your system. It doesn't matter what you do. You can be the best Harvard graduate in financial management or in public finance management. But if you lose 54 million rands in your operational budget, in your compensation budget in 1 year, you're likely to create shocks into your system. It became extremely difficult for us to go ahead filling in some of the positions where we have concluded interviews, everything. We could have been reckless and say we'll cross that bridge when we get there. Let's just fill the position. But the last thing you want is to be coming up with a lot of explanations when people have to be paid salaries because you don't have money. So we put a moratorium in November last year on filling positions and took a decision to prioritize positions and agreed which position would be prioritized. I have had 5 different engagements with Treasury on this issue. The last one was with DDG Mukhajan at Dondo. We have agreed that they will assist us to deal with this particular item. And they have also agreed in our midterm adjustment budget to shift certain funds from goods and services to compensation of employees, as long as it doesn't affect service delivery. But they have also told us in no ambiguous terms that we should not prioritize support functions. They feel that our support functions are bloated and we should prioritize line function. So you can see that you have 11 vacancies in the office of the DG. You have 16 vacancies in the COO's office. You have 16 in the delivery frameworks, you have 45 in PPMU. Now, PPMU was only established in 2012. There were new vacancies there. I don't know if that figure includes. I think it excludes sanitation because there were a significant number of sanitation figures there, and I hope so. And then in strategy and planning, we have 33. And if you look at the performance, again, of the two programs, Program 3 and Program 2, you can see that there is a positive correlation between filling of vacancies and poor performance, or high vacancy rate and poor performance. This is one item that is receiving attention. We've changed the structure of the organization, and I'll talk to this later as well, because we were also caught up in a situation where we wanted to fill the new vacancies based on the new structure instead of filling the vacancies based on the old structure, because the old structure of the organization is not aligned to what we want to achieve. In corporate services, you have 34 vacancies. In the CFO's office, you have 23 vacancies. While still on this matter, Chair, in one area that has been brought to our attention by the AG and by the Public Service Commission is the whole acting arrangement, which we've discussed with the Minister. It's receiving attention from the Minister. But at least some of the critical positions, the CFO position, the internal audit positions, those are critical positions that you should not leave them vacant for more than a year. So this is one area that is receiving attention. The CFO position, we've advertised, we've done the shortlisting, and I'm sure we will be able to make a decision soon. Internal audit position as well, we've done the shortlisting, and if we don't find any candidate, we'll do some headhunting. I just want to bring it to the attention of the portfolio committee that we will be able to deal with some of the acting arrangements. I think what we wanted to do is to fix the bus while it's in motion. You have to get some of the managers to act in some positions, fix the budget, fix the operational structure, and finalize the strategy. And all of these things should be concluded before the end of this current financial year. MTF allocation, if you look at it, we talked about it in the initial slides. We presented it in 2014, we had an allocation of 425 million for administration. This is one area that makes Treasury to think that program one is bloated. You have 425 million rand earmarked for program one. That's too high by any standard. Now, part of the problem there in program one is that you have a number of HSS admin positions. And HSS is not a support function. HSS is the human settlement subsidy or the housing subsidy system. That is not a support function. It's not a corporate function. It is a line function activity because it supports the delivery of housing. It supports the administration of the subsidy. So it should not be classified under administration. Grant management as well. Now we've moved grant management to housing development finance. So we've talked to Treasury about how to unbundle, so to speak, administration so that it doesn't come across as a bloated function. Because if you're going to go to Treasury and ask for more money when you have 425 million rands for support function, they will think that you are not here. The bulk of that 425, the bigger part of your budget should be going to program delivery support, which is your core business. That's what program delivery is all about. Your core business is in program three, which is program delivery. But you can see it will be growing over time. But we spend more time with Treasury to unpack administration. We have practical proposals that we have put forward to Treasury to restructure program one. You move to the next slide, the transfer payment, MTF allocation, you can see it over the next 3 years. This is your human settlements development grant. In 2014, it was 27, 28 billion, and 31 billion in 2017. You can see it's growing, even though it's not growing significantly because we've changed the baselines. You can see the urban settlement development grant as well, but it's not growing significantly. The human settlement capacity building grant, this is receiving attention from ourselves and Treasury. Once the USDG policy is accepted, there will be no need to provide capacity building grant. We will allow metros to ring-fence 5% of the allocation for their capacity needs. We're doing the same for provinces. Provinces are allowed to take 5% of the USDG allocation to fund capacity. I'm not going to go through all of these. I think you're very familiar with the allocation, the transfers that go to entities, to provinces, to municipalities. We'll move straight to the next slide, which talks to the adjustment budget. And there, you still have your 425 million in program one, but adjusted to 483 million. The human settlements policy strategy and planning was 89 and adjusted to 86 million. Program delivery, 298 and adjusted to 183 million. Development finance, 29 and adjusted to 28 billion. So the total is 30 billion and it was adjusted to 29 billion. If you look at the shift of funds, funds shifted between votes following a transfer function, the 1.1 billion rents, we all know it, even though it was socialized from the housing grant, there was no budget for budget eradication in the beginning of 2013. We made a proposal to socialize the housing grant to fund budget eradication. So the bigger part of that 1.1 billion rents was socialized from the housing grant. When the sanitation function moved, it moved with the budget. In terms of the audit outcomes, you had a session this morning with the AG, and I'm sure some of these issues were raised in that meeting, that the department received an unqualified audit opinion with emphasis of net, I showed it below. Now, I need to stress the AG raised this issue with us in a number of meetings, that we are not content with the unqualified opinion. I think we need to move to what they call a clean audit, even though there's no such a categorization. But it simply means that you have an unqualified audit with no other matter. And that's basically what you are aspiring to be. And I think it's achievable, Chair. All of these things that have been raised here by the AG are things that we can manage if we put all of our eggs together as managers. The material understanding of the vote, this issue was raised, that the significant understanding, you've seen it in Limpopo, you've seen the shifts in other areas, and you've seen it in our operational budget, you've seen it with the restructuring capital grant. It didn't perform in the last financial year. It's struggling to perform in this current financial year. In fact, there are recommended adjustments on the RCG by National Treasury, but we'll await for the Minister of Finance to confirm on that. There's some significant important targets were not reliable when compared to the source information or evidence provided. Now, we've put more emphasis on this issue because this is about the standard operating procedure that you put in place for accounting for performance. How do we know that it's done? When you say you have delivered on the target, how do we know that you have delivered? What is the portfolio of evidence that will prove that you have delivered on this target? And this is what we've spent some time discussing with the AG. And again, we've seen it even with some of the executives, and I've raised this in management meetings myself, that if a manager is contracting to provide four reports, one example, for instance, where the manager whose job was to manage the performance of the priority projects, the 18 residential and cabinet priority projects, but that particular manager contracted to provide four reports on each project. Whether the project performs or not, it doesn't affect the official because she has contracted to provide a report. And in fact, I made a comment that she must be the highest paid report writer in the country. If all what you're contracting to do is to provide a report, you should be contracting to get the project to perform. If the projects are performing, then it means you are performing. And I think there was no malice in the beginning when this whole exercise was started because national government departments, their role has always been on policy development and support. So most national government officials, they didn't know how to contract directly to programs and projects which are implemented by provinces and municipalities. So we have changed this slightly. We have also appointed, we have an acting head of strategic planning who is assisting us to get to that SOP, and she's sitting right there at the back. She's helping us to deal with the SOP, the standard operating procedure, and how to report properly so that the AG doesn't come back and wave a finger on us on this issue. The financial statements submitted for auditing are two material errors. We've discussed this with the CFO, and we don't think that this is something that should happen, and I think we need to manage this. This is completely avoidable and something that we can manage clearly. Entity-wide strategic risk. Chair, you've received all of these, and let me not restate them. I think what is important is what are we going to do about them, instead of focusing or restating the problem or restating what the AG has raised. I would run straight to the next slide. You can see there that there was an issue about Program 3. Program 3, Program Delivery Support. Here in Program 3, the two areas, it is the NASP and the vacancy. This is one area that is, as he has speaker, even though you will see that the non-performance indicators on NASP, they look good, but this is an area which is meant to deal with informal settlement upgrading. So you can't understand on it because there is a big demand for informal settlement upgrading. And these are some of the issues that were raised by the EG. You can't be shifting a budget from informal settlement upgrading to other programs when there is a demand for informal settlement upgrading. Again, the issue here was poor planning, including slow procurement processes. And we dealt with that, and we created a panel of professionals that will help us to procure faster than before. In fact, you will see it in this current financial year that we have managed to get as many professionals as possible on the ground. Moving to the next item, emphasis of matter in the audit report. I think we've captured this, but I think it's proper maybe to pause a little bit on the human resource plan. This is an issue that was also raised by the Public Service Commission. It's an area that is receiving an attention. Both the EG and Public Service Commission have raised this issue. And again, the reliability of targets has a lot to do with how you report on the performance and how you report on the targets. So we've streamlined that process, and we feel that we will not come back to this in the current financial year. Chair, if I can move maybe a little bit with speed and go straight to slide 71, current challenges. And again, I don't want to state the obvious. We have spent some time with you on the capacity of the department. We can't use capacity as an excuse. I think our job as senior managers, as executive managers, is to go and buy that capacity if we do have the budget to buy it. If we don't, then we need to find means and ways to restructure our budget so that we can beef up our capacity. We're not going to get additional allocations here. The fiscal is not doing very well, and we're not the only ones who are affected by budget cuts, but we need to start dealing with some of the inefficiencies within the organization. But we're confident that we will get the right capacity. But when we talk about capacity, we're talking about the capacity of the sector, not just the capacity of the department. If we don't have the right capacity within the department, we should have it in one of the entities. If we don't find it in any of the entities, we should find some capacity in one of the provinces or in the metros. I think we need to look at the sector as a whole and see how we utilize capacity, because there is no one sphere of government that has all the capacity in the world to deal with the challenges that we are faced with. And again, I'm not going to spend time on the next slide because we still talk about the capacity issues, the planning and pipelining issues. We're all aware that it takes not less than 6 months to package a human settlements project. Some of the timelines in packaging a housing project are statutory timelines. You can't short-circuit them because they are in the legislation. Your environmental approvals are in the legislation. Your planning approvals are in the legislation. So they are statutory timelines. that you can't do anything about. But all what we can do is to invest in project strategy. If you've mastered the art of planning in housing, it's easy to take care of construction. Once contractors and developers, especially the capacitated ones or the big ones, are on the ground, it's easy to monitor them. But the most difficult part in human settlements is pipelining, is planning, and is project packaging. And then again, the next slide talks about some of the challenges that we're faced with, communications, consultations. In this business, Chair, we know that it's not so much about how hard you work, it is about who knows the hard work that you are doing. When you do community outreach, community engagement, stakeholder engagements, for instance, the head of stakeholder management in the department has spent more time in Marikana engaging with the beneficiaries, with the trade unions, with communities, so that we are able to allocate houses to the beneficiaries. It's a very difficult project to administer in Marikana. We have good community liaison officers on the ground, but we need to make sure that we do the right thing. We don't want to create a conflict between members of the community. So we're spending more time in high-risk projects, mitigating, dealing with challenges. In Nelson Mandela Bay Metro, we spend more time dealing with contractors. This is an important aspect of our business, Chair. Again, I'm not going to spend time on the challenges. We do have some solutions, and maybe if we can go straight to the slide, I think it's slide 79. And go to the slide. All what we want to achieve, it's 79, yeah. All what we want to achieve, Chair, is to make sure that in our business, we need to jack up monitoring and reporting, monitoring and evaluation. And we said it in this portfolio committee that our monitoring and evaluation component is only doing between 15% to 30% of project level verification. Project level verification is going to each and every project that is active on the ground and check the status of the project and agree on what needs to be done on time. Time is everything in the built environment. If you leave the problem unattended in one quarter, it becomes a bigger problem in the next quarter. So time is everything. We want to improve project level verification. We're doing this in two ways. We're doing this with NHBRC, using NHBRC inspections, but we're also using our professional resource teams. We are allocating the professional resource teams to regions to monitor the performance of projects. Real-time interventions in problem areas, that's what we need. But you can only do that if you have a presence on the ground. The current structure of the organization was not designed to provide that real-time intervention. You'll see it in the slide that we are presenting to you, which is not here, that we have tried to regionalize our operations. We are managing a budget of 30 billion rands per annum. And this is a significant budget. For us to be able to monitor and manage provinces well, we need to have presence on the ground. So in the new structure, we have created, there is a component which is currently the current component, but we changed it into regions. You can ignore all the other items. Maybe just look at the third green column from the left, which is called program and project implementation. We have grouped the regions into three. We have region one, and region one is Gauteng, Northwest, and Free State. You'll see it in the next slide. If you look at the next slide, we have region one, which is Gauteng, Northwest, and Free State. We need a regional manager. We will contract directly with the accounting officer and also help us to deliver exactly the same numbers that we want to get from the HODs of these three provinces. If the three provinces don't perform, it means the regional manager will not perform. It means the national department will not perform. What it does, it fills the gap between the national department and our implementing partners. In this case, it's municipalities and provinces. So we're beginning to regionalize our operations so that we can all read from the same slate with provinces and municipalities. Region 2 is KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and Region 3 is the Capes, Eastern Cape, Western Cape, and Northern Cape. And we're doing this because we want to manage performance the way performance is supposed to be managed. We need to have presence where it matters the most at the project implementation level. And that's what we've done. And the next slide is what it tries to depict the same thing. In the short term, we may have to use the professionals that we have on our database.
Can you wind up in 5 minutes?
In 5 minutes, we will be done, Chair. Now, what we've done, there is a proposed roadmap, Chair. I'm not going to bore you with that. This is what we call the critical success factors. Consensus has to be obtained on the implementation and structure of the what we call the regional war rooms or the regional operational structures. And we've managed to get a high level of support, not only from the officials in the department, but also from the unions. We made a presentation to the unions. In fact, they have asked us to go back to the bargaining, the internal bargaining committee for this to be adopted properly, but we have kept the unions informed all the time. Funding is being secured for the war room heads and PRTs. We feel that we can fill some of the positions now. We can have a migration process in this current financial year. We don't have to wait for the next financial year budget. So we started that process. Finalization of the terms of reference, where we will be utilizing professionals, we need to conclude on the terms of reference. But also the role of the war rooms, because these are operational rooms that will be able to help us to manage some of the challenges that we're faced with on time. We'll prepare an implementation plan with tasks and responsibilities, and to have the war room up and running the latest before the end of the financial year. Our target, we still feel that we can still achieve that target, is to get everything up and running before the end of the calendar year. In respect of the first point, second and third and fourth, we have prepared an action list assigning responsibilities and deadlines to individual officials. In fact, in the evening meeting that we are having now, we will be discussing the migration plan amongst ourselves, how to migrate some of the officials from where they are into these new positions. We're discussing that today at 6, and we will have a final strategic planning session on this on the 28th of October this month. And that concludes, Chair, our presentation. It's a summarized version of a 200-page document. Thank you very much.
You did very well. You did very well. Thank you very much. That's the annual report. I don't know if there's any addition from the team. You will respond when there's quite clarity to that session. Thank you. Everybody's awake? Okay. Thank you very much. Honorable Rangatabashe, Honorable Tole, Honorable Papa, Honorable Ghana, and Honorable Nemes.
Thank you, Chairperson. The comprehensive presentation is welcome. In fact, the SDG has paralyzed me because I was going to stress only on the issues raised by the AG.
Are you paralyzed now? Just want to mention, are you okay?
And what is called, it is APCC. What is called, it's APCC. Yeah. So those three organizations. But at the end of the presentation, he was able to come forward and highlight those opinions and also give explanations to them. But I will just generalize Chairperson to say that although there are commitments
financially made by the department on the observations or opinion raised by the AGs and the other commissioners. They seem to be a trend of not after that not attending to them entirely as the commitments were made. I think you need to find a way of adhering to that, because I think, you know, from now on, if we try and do, we tried to do that last year, maybe you haven't done enough, that we monitor and interrogate your annual report and make sure that all the commitments through quarterly reports are being adhered to. The second point, Chairperson, is that I'm glad that the AGs has found no unauthorized expenditure on the department again, and also no irregular expenditure for 2014-2015. But the under expenditure, I'm not going to dwell much on it because we have had a session with the department to deal with it. You know, our concerns is that really we need really a strategic approach to try and lift up the spending of the department. I take all your, we take all your explanation as the grants are transferred to provinces and metros, all the like, but and also the creation of regions, and to repeat that we I'm glad that you have filled the pinch, that the way the department is structured, you don't have people that are the soldiers that goes to provinces, and we call them regions and monitor correctly. We hope that should be implemented as a matter of agency. So if you see the change on the implementation, that because it's not a good picture to be sitting at 70.6% on the spending. The other worrying factor that was highlighted is the late submission of invoices, because that tells us that you are not meeting the contractual obligations, and that results to putting our small business people out of the economy, out of business. Mm-hmm. Out of business, and that affects the economy of the country. And if we're not rectifying that, then we're not going to realize the NDP goals of 2030 and on the economic side of the outcome of outcome eight of the NDP, which is our 2030. That really you need to have a plan to get that. We know that is not only you, it's something that is happening cutting across departments and in all spheres of government, but would like the human settlement really, because we are very big working with the small business community in improving. It should be the one that improve more or on that. You've just alluded on the other finding that says that you are discontinuing the capacity building by the trend on in 2016-2017 budget. But I understand it with the qualification of saying that you will capacitate more municipalities or metros that doesn't have capacity compared to municipalities that have this. But let's unpack why there's always you find a lack of capacity in Ebourouli, which is not supposed to be the case. Maybe we need a strategy to deal with the drainage and the loss of constitutional memory in the organization. How can we develop a succession plan with, not how can we have HR corporate services within your department. That must develop a succession plan for the department in different branches, especially those that are you have referred them to line functions that are very important for us. But I think that totally we can't prevent people from leaving the organization, But I think the skills transfer would have done some skills transfer. For when other people are resigning, then the organization doesn't go down. Because I suspect every woman is being affected by that and other municipalities. I think that most of my phone responded to. Yeah. But lastly, the FFC, they are very much concerned about the delay in terms of the accreditation. But what you have been giving us the whole of this year and the plan that you have tabled today, although they report direct to Parliament, but I think like any other commission that you are able to meet up with, I think it will do no harm in inviting FFC and have an open discussion and explain to them why did the minister and the department arrive at such a particular point, what are the reasons behind, so that you put them at ease. Because I think their problem is that if they read about it on the newspaper, whether they were very much involved at the establishment of the accreditation processes. I think they have a little bit of they feel aggrieved, although they didn't say so, but we sense that they feel aggrieved. And the chairperson undertaking to invite them to meet with us, but I think that doesn't stop you as a department to meet with them. And it will be even better if we try and meet with them before the chairperson invites them to meet with us as a portfolio committee. Thank you, chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mbala Kabasha. I'm glad to see that you. Your paralysis was dispelled. Honorable Tole, I missed your voice.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for presentation. My Chairperson, first of all, is that one of understand by the topic. But I want to find that, because it's not the first time. Even last year, there were 1.4 billion. Which was understood by Gauteng. But at the end of the year, they say they have utilized their money. But now it seems that there was no capacity in the province. But I don't know what is happening. What mechanism do the department have to capacitate and help the province of Gauteng and the province of Limpopo? Because there is that challenge of all those provinces. Even Western Cape, if we check Western Cape on USDG, they are understand what the department are doing to have these provinces. And the other question is that one of CRU, poor performance on CRU. What are they going? What mechanism do they have now? What are they going to do about their poor performances? Because even the budget of CRU is not in a good shape. And the other question is that one of. Of ratification, if you check the spend of Eastern Cape on ratification, it's quite shocking. Because what I want to understand from the department and the acting DG, do they have a plan to help the Eastern Cape on this ratification? Because it seems that there is a ratification after ratification in the Eastern Cape. And the other one is the NHPLC. If they say the NHPLC have monitor and evaluate the houses, I'm different from what are they saying. Because we was in Eastern Cape. We was in Eastern Cape, Jefferson. These houses which were constructed in Eastern Cape. Do they tell us that these houses were reached up with NHPLC? Real, that's shocking. You can't say that. I can give it to you, man.
Okay.
Get above niggas, man. Maja, I go to Ghana. What can? I'm not the only one. Okay. Actually, it was shocking. Even the toilet that was constructed
It's about 600 toilets which was contracted. There were no proper planning in the construction of those toilets. So I don't know, Jefferson, if they say the NHPRC are working, because I was in the Wokaville in Kaltain, where the construction which is continuing in Wokaville. There's no, NHPRC are not visiting that area. Sometimes they say they take 6 months before they come to inspect the houses. And the other one, Chairperson, is that one on page, is that page which I saw here. Page 28, Chairperson. On page 28, the capacity. What I want to understand from the department, do they have any plan to capacity to help, because they have 300 million which have been budgeted for capacity building. How many officials have been capacitated through this program? Because if you see Stop Johnson, Iguru, Lenin Metro, and Cape Town and Mandela City, it shows that there is no capacity, that's why they understand. Please, Chair President, can they give us some. And the vacancy, we have actually seen this issue of vacancy for a long time. It's not the first time that they say. Just imagine we want to run the department professionally, but we have 178 vacancies. 178 vacancies. And the last one, Chair President, is just shifting of money from the Department of Human Settlement to water and sanitation, because there was that problem of sanitation with it. But how much have they shifted to this 1.1 billion? Okay. I'm a bomb.
Thank you very much, Honorable Tony. Honorable Papa?
Thank you, Chair. Teach him that he did not paralyze me, so he made me wiser. He made me wiser. What is important here is that they are able to highlight these problems in the human resource area. But now I think also there should be some very, very clear indications that this is going to be resolved. There is that linkage between the poor performance and the capacity to the HR personnel, which means then, therefore, we should get it clear whether it's the shortage of the personnel or it's the shortage of the skills, so that if it is people who must be skilled, it must be. If maybe there's a problem of people are not deployed at the right places, it should be. But it appears that there is a will to resolve this issue. But now, DG also made a mistake where he indicated that they are going to try and resolve some of these challenges. I think they are going to try and resolve all the issues and fall when they fall, not try and resolve some. But now also, I would like to know if there's any strategy of retention, that the skills that you have, the people that you feel that they are absolutely relevant in the department, they should not have any willingness or desire to leave the department in this human situation. And also that, do we have any performance management, personal assessment plan that makes one feel that if I do not perform, my job is at stake. So that people should not know that I'm here for my 5 years and so on and so on. But sometimes it helps if someone feels that if I don't perform here, my job is at stake. But otherwise, this response to what the AG is indicating a of the human segment. I think it is very important, but absolutely when it is being implemented, and absolutely also that part of that alignment, I think also it will assist us when that alignment is clarified later. I mean, it's very, very clear, so that it should be followed and no other shortcomings will come on there. Thank you.
Thanks
very much, Chair, and thanks very much for the report. The AG did find that there was no wasteful expenditure or all those bad things. So it's a good thing for the department that there was no money that was spent which was not authorized to. But then the biggest challenge or the telling story of this report of this past financial year is that and that's how we started acting DG. That money is being spent, but then we don't know what it's being spent on. When we went to the government awards, one of the things that was said is that the delivery of houses is going down and down and down. And what you confirm today, that is the first time that you are actually below 100,000 in terms of the delivery of structures, makes for a very telling thing. Because I think sometimes we do tend to talk of houses. We think we are a government of houses, or we are a department of houses. We should not be. We are the department of people. And when you look at that, when you consider that we have been unable to deliver close to 19,000 subscriptions, what that translates to, DG, is that 80,000 people that could have been adequately housed haven't been housed. That's how we should look at this report. Because if you only look at it and say, no, it's only 6,000 or 5,000 houses that we could not deliver, then it's a wrong way of looking at it. It's people that we're talking about here. We're talking about 80,000 people that were supposed to have been housed, that haven't been housed. And we are, that aspect of things is not coming out clearly. And I know, DG, you said housing on the rectification and goes into the performance. Housing says we spend the bulk of the money rectifying or fixing the asbestos roofing. But then if you go to the rectification slide for housing, you realize that they've only spent 31 million. It's only 31 million that housing reports to have spent on rectification. So now, where are they reporting this asbestos thing? Because surely it cannot be on the 31 million. That because of 31 million, we could not achieve, we could not give you an extra 3,000 units, unless if the units now are costing less. Because we need to start knowing from this report, where does housing report their asbestos rectification, because they are not reporting it under the rectification program, because that's not where it is. And still on that rectification, and I did my numbers, and I'm looking at around 160,000 that we spend on a subsidy house. The money that we have spent on rectification equals 4,700 subsidized units. That's what it equals to. 4,700. Or give or take, we're talking about 18,000 people. Because that's how I want to look at these matters. 18,000 people that were supposed to have been housed haven't been housed because we didn't do our work the previous time. And the issue of Eastern Cape, Honorable Solly has raised it. That and I always raise it, that they are up there in terms of delivering substructures. But guess what? You go to the next page, they are up there. your possibility or probability of making mistakes also increases. That's why on the next page, when you have just praised them that they've spent 100%, they've achieved their targets in terms of price and top structures, the next page is to say, oh, they've also spent so much money on the education. That something is there, honorable colleagues, on the money. We need to go there and investigate. You know, that the celebration doesn't last long. Because after 2 minutes of being praised, you're being told that you're spending more money fixing the work that you have just praised you of doing. So that's another concern. DG, you spoke about the person that was the highest paid report writer, probably in the country. And then when you started the presentation, you know, I think the first few slides, you talk about the achievement, you know, the 102 objectives that you set yourself to achieve, or 146 that you set yourself to achieve, and you achieved 102, 44 you could not achieve, that's the 70% success. But if you go deep to check where the successes are, you'll see that most of them are in the report submission and report writing. That's where the success is. How many reports have been submitted? 4 reports written, 4 submitted, green. All the greens, all the reports have got green. So a report is written, yes, we counting says they can't build houses. A report submitted, yes. 80, yes. Doesn't matter what the content is. So if we go to Jefferson, if we should drill into the 102 success points that the department says they are, you'll see that most of them, it's not what makes the difference in the lives of the people. Most of them. Those that make the difference in the lives of people, like informal settlement upgrade, we are only around 50%. We have done well with the loans, so we must congratulate that we are doing so well with the loans. But then, informal settlement upgrade, top structures, title deeds, we are creating a backlog. That's another story of this last financial year. Is that 2/3 of the houses that were built in the last financial year, 2/3 of them, we have only given title deeds to 32,000 out of a complement of 95,000. So it means 3,000 of the houses that were built in the last financial year, title deeds were not given. So even in the last financial year, when we said we are on the new road of eradicating the backlog, we have added onto the backlog 63,000 houses that are waiting for title deeds. So that's another story of this report. On the other aspect, I think the governance side, in terms of the minister coming to the committee, that's great, you know. But the minister coming, informal settlement is not upgraded, but it's great. Governance is good, the cap, so it's all good. Just finally, because I don't want to monopolize the time, Jefferson. When the PSC was here, I asked a question around, there's a staff member that has been suspended. 2 staff members for 499 days. That's what the PSC told us. And then it says in your annual report, the actual report, not the presentation, the actual report, that it was 0. But then when the PSC came to you, you said, oh, sorry, we forgot. Because these 2 staff members that have been suspended for 499 days, I think the cost of that was around about 1.6 million. I'm not sure if one of the staff members is the corporate service. I'm not sure if that's one of them. But if you could just give us the nature of the suspension, because 499 days, in a year, we work around about 220 or 180 days, I'm not 220 days, and these ones have been suspended for more than 2 years. And you know, we'll be paying. So if we can just brief us on the nature of those suspensions. And a final.
That's a final.
No, it's a final. I know the injury time is over. So this is injury time. DG, why is it that the rectification aspect of things, you see, you've given us in a slide, but the slide you've presented on rectification is not in the annual report. The information you have provided on rectification is not in the annual report.
Honorable Menezes.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I want to join my colleagues in appreciating the presentation. I think, indeed, the acting DG is very good. He has skills of presenting the report. So you did very well. We are all now no longer as we were in the morning. But be that as it may be, I want to agree with Honorable Ghana that on the side of diabetes, we still feel as the portfolio, there's no reason why people who finish 15 years staying in their houses, we are still coming with excuses in terms of leaving them houses. I think you must do better. Give the people their own title deed for 15 years. Others have died, and they are not happy even in their graves. So please, this cannot continue. We will tell them rest in peace, but we know they can't be resting in peace without their title deed for 15 years. All because of your parents. But in the interviews, you said you are having all expertise. You can work under pressure, but we can see you. Fine. On the page 10, on the private home on the fleet, you are saying you are including the private home loans. Now, I'm not very sure. When you say you're including the private home loans, so maybe you can explain it better. Like I thought we are counting where we are contributing. But if you count even my house where you didn't assist me, I will have a problem. So explain how far you go in counting the private ones. It should be those where you have contributed something. So you can't just want to give numbers. Maybe we must also be given a list in each province. These are the people, these are the areas. Because when we meet teachers and police and all these middle class people, they are saying they are not seeing this program on the ground. So I think maybe we must be given more on this. You made a strong one. You make us happy on your presentation. I think the Gauteng story. Because Gauteng and KZN are historically are the areas, provinces that have a history of moving, living at small houses. Now that Gauteng is slowly becoming now something else, we would want you to explain what are you doing. Because you are saying they are talking about hailstorms. They are talking about asbestos. But we know, we have been in Gauteng. So there are still many houses with asbestos have not been touched. What asbestos are we talking about? Where? How much? Reliability of the excuse you're giving. So I think, because you have also, you want us to believe it. On which basis? Give us a portfolio of evidence for us to believe that this money has not just disappeared because they are going to say good.
So we want to know what is happening. Where has the money gone? Is it asbestos or hailstorm? Then quantify it. I think only Pompo. The biggest problem is that this was a tip from the area that we must check. On the Pompo, you redirect the money elsewhere, but you don't fix the problem. It's like you are that you remain happy, but when you present to us, you always say you have sent somebody to assist them, to work with them. You make us feel that you're doing something, but as the time goes on, we now realize what it is. That somebody usually sends, maybe he's going on holiday. We don't see the impact of that somebody that was sent to those people. So that the people of Limpopo are not compromised forever. Yeah? Because we are leaders, we're happy that those that are high performing provinces are taking the money. So the department is seen as performing. And yet the people of Limpopo and those other provinces that are not performing are compromised. So what are you doing? So you told us previously, you are dealing with this money, you are sending somebody, he's staying there. But where are the results of that somebody who's saying, hey, what is it? So there should be consequence when somebody is sent and there's no impact. And it's an impact assessment of the visit of somebody. You can't be staying on hotel and then we get nothing in return. I think the issue of rectification, the what I want to get a clarity on, you have contractors that you have given, you have signed an agreement, a contract agreement with them that they will perform a particular number. All of them, they say they understand, they are qualified, they are this level of a contractor, you know, because they are dated. Now, when they pay, when they give these falling houses, why do you pay for rectification? Why is it not them who come and fix their own mess? Why do you fix their mess? The last two, sir.
Last one.
Okay. Because the suspension thing has been mentioned, but you must appreciate, we feel strong about any official that is suspended and there's no hearing up to a year. In fact, within a month, there should be a hearing. Otherwise, why suspend? Nobody must be suspended if you have no reason to suspend. You don't play politics. You don't play around with other employees because you will also be affected. If you make it personable to suspend, so it must not happen. Suspension must never in this department. We are not going to be happy of just suspending people for no reason. Because if you have no DC in a month, in 2 months,
if in a year, to 2 years,
it can't be right. There should be a consequence. Whoever has suspended that somebody must then answer. Why can't we suspend that very same person who suspend others and then no DC within a month, even a year? No, it's not acceptable. Same person you said, Mandime. Enjoy HR, and there should be an annual plan, isn't it? So I think you must move, please. Move.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for that. Before I hand over to the department who responds to the honorable that have asked questions, one just wants to stress the fact that you made a commitment. We are almost at the midterm of our term. The commitment has been made by the department and the minister that 1.5 housing opportunities are going to be created. As you look at your progress and how you are performing thus far, when you look at this, do you see yourself and us meeting this target? I think it's a very critical factor that we need to honestly look at it and answer that. And concerning, I just want to zoom in program one, for instance. When you look at program one, somebody can be very excited and say, there we have spent about 98% of the budget, and we have met 39 of the 45 targets that we said we want to achieve. But program one in particular, there are certain things that speaks to the audit outcome that have not been done. For instance, one, the issue of the audit coverage, the internal audit coverage itself, has really not been implemented to the full. I think we need to agree, because most of the audits there are at the reporting stage, but that speaks to exactly what the audit outcome is all about. But secondly, you reported to us at some point that an anti-fraud and corruption policy was going to be put in place. We're not sure how far this policy is, and that speaks to things that are going to put this department back on track. The Service Delivery Improvement Plan, which falls under this program. So when you look at the 98% that you have then spent on, what have you spent this 98% on? On what? Because the big things that are impacting on the department itself are still not met. And that's an area that we need to look at and be very concerned as this department. When, for instance, I'm worried about the fact that when you look at program three, which for me is the backbone of this department in terms of service delivery. In that program, most of understanding and underperforming is on the NASP project. And NASP is where our people are in terms of informal settlement. And as the much as the report itself sounds nice and it's like music into the ears, but the real issue that we need to talk about, that's what is worrying. We are not performing as nice, as well as we should on this last project. And this last project is exactly what we should be moving and running with. Because that's where, as we move closer to the local government elections, that's where the protests are going to come from. That's the reality of the situation. We need to roll up our socks and be delivering better on this project. There's policies and that are supposed to, for instance, we talk about the white paper. I don't hear the time frame. We seem to be just throwing this year. It's in progress. It's been in progress. It will be in progress until we leave this portfolio commission. We need to have the sense of the time frame. We shouldn't just be told that it's in progress. For me, it's very critical that as we are given this report, we are able to understand that we are progressing. I just want to add more on this issue of the policy, because Honorable Tony raised the issue of CRU, and all of us here know that there's also an issue of a CRU policy that must be put in place, and that talks to the delivery of the CRU. And for me, as we give this report and being happy about, let us just make sure that come next time you come here, we need to hear a better story, a story that Honorable Ghana talks about. Let this story be better than it is. I just wanted to say those things, because remember, as we had listened to the report in the morning, both from the FFC, from the PSC, and from the AG, one of the big things that we should all understand is that the audit outcome will only improve if we are improving and tightening up on HR issues. Because the reality of the situation is that the three levels of assurance, the first level, which is management, senior management, is where there's problems. The other two levels are not there. The big problem is on the first level, and that's the department itself. And until we're able to improve on that level, we will talk about these opinions or these findings, that you're saying you're hoping that it will be just unqualified with no findings. These findings are going to sit there until we improve.
start with the first five questions. The first question is a comment that there seems to be a trend of not responding timeously on the commitment on issues raised by the AG, and it's followed by a recommendation that perhaps on a quarterly basis we need to come here and report on how we are attending to those matters, to the issues that the AG has raised, so that the committee can be assured that we attend to the issues that the Auditor General has raised. We take that as a recommendation, Chair, and that's something that we will put into action. The third question is that you want to see a recovery plan. We need to come and present a recovery plan that demonstrates that the graph is going up, the performance figures will be going up because they've been going down consistently. And I think that is also a recommendation, and that's something that we're spending time discussing because we know where the problem areas are. Then there was a question about the late submission of invoices. This is one standing item in Forsyth, and that's where all the DGs sit, where the DG and the presidency will be able to name and shame all the departments that are not doing well on this item. We have it as well in our management meetings. We identify all of those areas. But in the back office, in the head office, I think it's easy for us to deal with those items, and we can identify them and manage them. I think the biggest challenge is in the construction of houses by provinces, and I think that's the area that we need to pay more attention to, because those small contractors who don't get paid on time will not be able to sustain themselves. In the business of construction, cash flow is everything. So it's important that contractors get paid on time. But in order for contractors to be paid on time, it means project level verification has to be done as well, because you can only pay when we are convinced that the goods have been delivered, and they've been delivered in good quality. So it's two ways. It's checking up verification so that you are able to pay on time. So that matter is receiving attention, and we've noted it, and I think it's been raised by this committee consistently that we need to improve on the payment of contractors or service providers within 30 days. And I'm sure my colleague, the CFO, can comment on this as well. The question of brain drain, institutional memory in various municipalities is happening across the board. And that is why we're taking a conscious decision to say what would work here is if we get the three spheres of government to collaborate on program implementation. Because at the end of the day, the bigger part of our business in the built environment is to implement projects and allocate houses to beneficiaries. So if we can get all the three spheres of government to work on that objective, and that's what we're trying to achieve in Nelson Mandela, to get the province, to get national, and to get municipalities to work together. In fact, yesterday we recommended to BASA, because the private sector, the only reason why the private sector is always unwilling to work with us is because it takes time for government to approve, in some cases, simple tasks. For instance, in the case of planning approval, you may find that even though you have stipulated timelines, but in other cases, it's simply a question of inefficiencies and red tape. So they recommended that we must have a one-stop shop where we deal with all of these things in the region. In other words, you will have your HODs in those regional operations. You will have your municipal teams, and you'll have national teams in those regions, so that you are able to deal with these things in one room, in one stop shop. So part of regionalizing our operations is intended to make sure that we deal with these things timelessly. We can hold each other, the three accounting officers from the three spheres of government, accountable if certain things don't happen. And currently, you have to knock at different doors before you get answered on a simple task. And then there was a question about inviting FFC to brief us. Briefing the FFC about the accreditation process. I think it's only fair to say that FFC should have been briefed. When we took a decision to change track on accreditation and the MECs in MINMEC resolved to take a different approach, all what we should have done is to go back to FFC and brief them about the approach that we are taking. And I think it's fair to do this, and we will plan a meeting and brief FFC about the approach that we are taking. I think we overlooked that step. That was an important step in the process. If you look at the whole assignment framework, you will not be able to do it until you have presented to the FFC. It's one of the steps that you need to do, so the FFC treasure. So we will go back to them and brief them about the approach that we are taking. The two provinces, Gauteng and Limpopo, I will combine these questions because they came, there were three of them, and I will try to answer them. In Gauteng, there is a task team in place chaired by the DG, the provincial DG, and Mr. Pascal Moloy, who is now CEO of SDA, sit in that meeting. I sit in that meeting. And we meet on a regular basis. Pascal was meant to be with us here. There were briefing minister and the president on the handing of houses on Friday, on Thursday, the end of day two. So we have a structure in place to deal with this. The challenge of Gauteng is not the lack of availability of projects. They can upscale in a number of other areas. They are simply finding it difficult to recover from the contractual commitments that they have on hailstorm, asbestos, bulk infrastructure, and accruals that are there. So they have a cash flow, we call it a twin problem. A cash flow problem, they don't have enough budget to upscale, and they have contractual obligations to pay for the work done because they appointed contractors to do this work on rectification. I'll come back to the question about how rectification is classified in Gauteng, how it's categorized, why it's not reported under rectification. But they have a twin problem. They have contractors. They have highly capacitated contractors in various regions. But you can't ask contractors to upscale if you don't have adequate funding. The MEC calls it legacy issues that I'm dealing with. So I'm dealing with all these legacy issues, which means he needs to pay those contractors that were contracted for asbestos and hailstone before he can move into new things, because once a contract is signed, the contract is a contract, it needs to be honored. You can't walk away from it. So there is a significant amount of money that he has to go into paying contractors who were contracted for asbestos and hailstone. We will do project level verification on where the money was spent on the asbestos and hailstone. We're busy with asset verification, appointing PRTs now to do proper asset verification on the ground. So this exercise has to be verified. What did the money buy? So we will do that exercise, and we'll bring that report here once it's concluded. So with Gauteng, I think they will turn the tide, and I think they will be able to go up. But it may not be at the level where we want them to be this year. They have contracted to deliver 40,000 housing opportunities this year. And I think they're not even halfway right now as you speak, and I'll check the latest figures. But they have not hit halfway in terms of achieving that figure. I think the last time I checked, they were sitting at 10, which means they still need to deliver other 30,000 housing opportunities. We spent some time last week to say, where is the other thing? Is it at rooftop level? Is it top structure? Is it a wall plate level? Is it a slab level? Because you need to know the magnitude of the problem. You need to know the risk now so that you are able to make quick decisions, not in January, but now before we break for December. So So we're doing that exercise with the DG of the province, with Mr. Miloyi, myself, and other, and the HOD and other officials in that meeting. In Limpopo, we're quite convinced that in Limpopo this year there will be no need in Limpopo to redirect the funds. We have seconded Mr. Chalke there to work with the HOD. HDA has signed an agreement. Remember, in Limpopo, the servicing of sites is done by HDA. There's a contractual arrangement between the province and HDA. HDA takes care of services, professional work, and then the province then takes care of the construction of the toll structures. What we've done, we've also, through HDA, appointed the project management office, a service provider that does all the packaging of projects in Limpopo. I am convinced that most of the problems in Limpopo are problems of the past. Remember, in the last 2 years, in 2012, Limpopo has been grappling with procurement. They never appointed contractors. They never went through that process of appointing contractors. In 2013 as well, they started very late to appoint contractors. They appointed contractors for service sites in the last financial year, only in November, which is why we did a reality check to say, is it possible for Limpopo last year? This is the question we ask ourselves. Is it possible for Limpopo to spend the entire budget? And the answer was no. Even Limpopo officials made it very clear to us. Even the 600 million rand that we left, remember we talk about 500 million, plus minus 600 million. The 500 million that we left, or 600 million that we left, I don't know the exact figure, they didn't spend all of it. They had to apply for a rollover of about 160 million rand, which confirms that they were not going to spend the entire budget. And we did the right thing by shifting the funds away from Limpopo. But this year, we will not be shifting the funds. We have upscaled on the capacity. HDA is on the ground. Neville is arranging a meeting next week to look at the new contractors that they have appointed. They have appointed contractors on the 30th of September to upscale the capacity of, or to supplement the capacity of the existing ones. The only challenge that we have in the Limpopo right now is that they're going small. They will appoint contractors for 200 units there, 400 units there, 50 units there, and result that if you are recovering from a lump, you need to go big. We thought that this year they will appoint big contractors, even if they do subcontracts to the small ones. But in year one, you want to go big to demonstrate that you can deliver. So we're managing that process. Most of those contractors are on site. As we speak, we looked at them. They're all on site right now. So the picture in the Limpopo will change. We discussed with the MEC at MINMEC last week, and she's briefed us that they have concluded the procurement processes. In the last 2 years, they have been grappling with procurement processes for some time. The CRU performance, this program, there are two main issues. There are three, in fact. One is the standardization of the product. Two, it is the cost per unit. And three is the scale. In terms of the standardization of the product, you will see it in our reports that the unit cost varies. In some provinces, it costs 250. In other provinces, it's 450. And we've seen even a cost of 600 in other provinces per unit. Now, what we need to do, because the bulk of this, when this program was changed, it was changed from hostel redevelopment to community residential unit. Now, you can't be building a state-of-the-art unit in areas where the rate collection, the collection rate is sitting at less than 30%, because you'll be forced with a situation where you come back and rectify these units using the same grant, and we've seen it here in the Western Cape. If you go around the Cape Fest, they're painting and rectifying and replacing roofs here using the same grant, because the maintenance plan is not in place and the payment rate is very low. This is one program that requires a major review, because it's an expensive program and it's not helping us to achieve the scale that we want to achieve. The intention when it was packaged was very good, to convert ourselves into community residential units. But we need to find a better way, and Chair, I concede on this one, that we need to come back here with a policy that will standardize how we will manage this program going forward. And even if it means we fix certain aspects of it, and we will do that. Rectification in Eastern Cape, there was a question about this. How are you going to help Eastern Cape? There, the challenge there. The two provinces where you have a massive, I would say, backlog on rectification, for a lack of a better word, it's Eastern Cape and KZN. The biggest number of rectification countrywide is KZN and Eastern Cape. And some of those areas where you're talking rectification, it's units that were developed before the introduction of your MHPRC. Remember, the bulk of it, you may find that there are new ones, but it's not big. And where you have new units that have not been built properly, there we chase the contractor. And if we don't find the contractor, or we do find the contractor and they are unable to rectify themselves, we blacklist them. So we follow proper processes there. But you also have, post-2001, MHPRC was introduced in 2001. So post-2001, you have your PHP units, traditional PHP units, where people came together and built houses for themselves. The PHP policy is very specific on this. That where people are coming together to build houses for themselves, in PHP, PHP started as Lima, Litima. There is no need for those units to be enrolled with MHPRC. That's what the policy says. But we picked it up that people are no longer building houses for themselves, and they're using some of the unscrupulous contractors to build houses in PHPs, in disguise as support organizations. So we picked this up, and then we took a decision in 2011, MINEC took a decision in 2011 that all human settlements projects must be enrolled with MHPRC. Because you will see that some of the houses are in the PHP space that are cracking. So you will notice that the bigger portfolio for rectification, even in Eastern Cape, it's units that were not registered or enrolled with MHPRC, and most of them were even before 2001. So we can ask the MHPRC when they come here to present that portfolio of rectification, because they have done a comprehensive report on rectification. Where is the problem? And they've broken down that problem by three categories. That is pre-1994, post-1994, and post-2011. Because post-2011 is your PHP. You're only talking about PHP post-2011. So we can ask them to come and make that presentation, or we can ask them tomorrow to touch on this issue as well, because they have been managing it for us. They even help us to categorize the rectification strategies. In other words, they will come up with three methods of rectification: remedial, extensive rectification, and rebuilding. They made that presentation. But the message is that we don't want to spend more money on rectification at the expense of creating new opportunities. That's the principle. And then the question on, I was shown the Fame Boss project in Eastern Cape. I don't think there's an issue with quality there. You know the contractor that's building there, they've been building quality issues, houses. I think the challenge that we have is that most people don't like semi-detached units. You will see it in the Western Cape, other parts of Gauteng, where you build BNG houses, and most of those BNG houses are attached. So they would prefer that you separate them instead of creating a semi-detached arrangement. And that's why you get those spaces, those small spaces. The challenge with that is that if you go for that route, you need to make sure that your drainage system is right and you've got your gutters right, because if you don't have the gutters and you don't have your drainage system right, those houses are going to be affected because the water will be falling on the walls of some of the houses. So it's not wise to get contractors to build those houses very close to each other. What we will do, we have already taken this decision because it was raised in Munich last week, that we will send the MHPRC inspectors to go and check these units, because it was raised, this issue was raised very sharply, and the contractor has not been paid for some of the work that has been done there. I have discussed it with the HOD, and HOD has taken a decision that Buffalo City must pay, and then Buffalo City can reclaim the money from the province. They are of the view that the project was not approved by the province, and the municipality went ahead and appointed the contractor. But there was a meeting last week between the province, the municipality, to try and resolve, and the contractor to to try and resolve that issue. Again, the issue about the posts, the vacant posts, I think the TLC has picked it up now, give a quick verification. I think TLC only looked at the figures before the movement of sanitation. When we checked the last figures, we had about 98 vacant posts, and I think it has moved now to about 100, 101. I can ask the CFO to verify that figure. TLC took the original figure because the sanitation component only moved out of the department on the 1st of November last year, in the middle of the financial year. So they didn't factor in the vacant posts without sanitation. But still, it's very high. I don't want this to come across as an excuse. We have to fill those positions. 98 positions vacant or 100 is very high by any standards, and we have to fill it. And then the question about the performance management plan, we do have a performance management plan. The rule that we have in the organization is that we will do individuals, performance management of individuals, after we have done the performance of the branches and the chief directorate, because the performance of the branch PPMU, the branch planning, and the performance of the DGG, the two should talk to each other. You can't have a situation where the branch is not performing or the chief directorate is not performing and the DDG is doing very well. So what we do, we start with the components within the organization, appraise them, and then move to the individuals. So we have that. Where there's no performance, there are exception letters. In fact, I signed exception letters last week. I even signed another one for myself because I'm still acting as, in fact, the COO signed it for me for the component PPMU because we did performance reviews 2 days after the deadline because of some of the challenges that we faced within Nelson Mandela Bay. We do have that process. The real problem is not so much on the performance management process. It is on the contracting. That's what we want to get right. If you contract badly, then performance review is meaningless. If you simply contract to provide the reports, then you will submit the report irrespective of whether the organization is performing or not. So what we want to perfect is good contracting. Contracting simply means you must have good performance agreements so that we are able to hold each other accountable when things don't happen. And we've seen that the level of contracting was very poor across the board. In fact, we can do a quick assessment. I offered to give this to Minister the other day, that if you look at the performance agreements that we have had, and you look at the APP, and you look at the targets that we have to achieve, they were not talking to each other, and that's what we are correcting. In fact, we discussed that last month with the DDGs. In fact, I even delayed signing performance agreements of the DDGs because I wanted to make sure that we get the contracting, the performance agreements right. Chair, I have covered the Gauteng challenge, and I've covered the Eastern Cape. I think there is a point on Eastern Cape of reconciling rectification and the good story. And I think we take the challenge that if we have to go and do 100% project verification in Eastern Cape, we will do that. That is our job, to count the assets on the ground, because we are expected to do that. We will go and do that verification in Eastern Cape. But you will notice that in Eastern Cape, the issue that was raised by Treasury is that they would want Eastern Cape to focus more in areas where there is a big backlog for housing. And the areas where there is a big backlog for housing is Nelson Mandela and Buffalo City. But if you look at the allocation in Alfonso, it's higher than the allocation in Buffalo City. And the backlog in Alfonso is smaller than Nelson Mandela, Buffalo City, Crisani, and Oakdale. But Alfonso is getting the biggest allocation than any of these three. So Treasury raised this issue, and they were saying your budget is not following the need, and we want you to correct this. We're discussing that with the HOD. And then there was a question about the issue of submission of reports. And this is the conducting issue. This is what we want to rectify. that we shouldn't make it easy for ourselves. We're not contracting to make it easy for ourselves. We're contracting to achieve the objectives of the organization. So as executive managers, our contracts are directly linked to the organizational performance contracts. So if the bigger part of our core business is housing delivery, so the core business of the organization is housing delivery, the contracting of senior managers should talk to that. That's how you get it right. Anything else is malicious compliance. You're simply doing it to look good so that you can meet your target easily. Even if the sector is not paying, you will be able to reward people and give bonuses because they have contracted wrongly. So there is a misalignment between what we need to do and how we contract as senior managers in the organization. And we've addressed it. We spend a lot of time on this issue as managers, and we'll come back to you in terms of how it's been addressed. Chair, I think, yes, you've asked us to get reports in Limpopo. The person that we have seconded to Limpopo, we must get reports on how we're doing. And we're going to Limpopo next week to look at the performance of some of the contractors who are there and to look at whether HDA is helping them to get the sites. They have appointed a new service provider to help them with project packaging. All of those things will be discussed there. And the comments about NASP has not been performing on the financial side for some time. I think I have touched on this issue, that it is, in fact, the chief director who is driving this program knows my views on this. And I said it is criminal that we underspend on NASP in a strategic program like informal settlements upgrading, because there is a massive demand for informal settlements upgrading budget. You can manage it in different ways. I think we have not been creative enough in making sure that this particular budget performs. Because we started at 100 million at about 97 million, and it's been reduced now by Treasury to about plus minus 80 million, 87 million. So this budget has to perform. But the biggest challenge in the past was procurement, the slow turnaround time in procurement. Now we've got all those professionals in-house, and just as we speak, we have professionals in more than 60 municipalities. And we can come and present those reports by municipality, the reports that are coming out of the work that we're doing. So we're confident that going forward in our will perform. We took 20 million and we gave it to HDA to prioritize the mining towns. And again, we take it, Chair, the CRU policy, we will come back to this. We need to tighten up the HR issues. There are serious HR issues that we need to deal with. And I think in some cases, we've seen it, that there is a mismatch of skills, you know, in areas of HR where we appoint people in areas where they are not able to perform. And we'll have to deal with those issues so that we don't manage around people, we need to manage directly. Fraud prevention plan, I think we do have that in place. Maybe the head of internal audit can talk to this. It's been signed off. We discussed it even last week. The HR plan. HR plan is in place. What is needed is the implementation plan, the annual implementation plan, and it needs to be aligned to the target. Again, Chair, I think the message that you are making is that we can't say Program 1 is doing well when we have so many issues that are coming out of Program 1 that have been raised by AG. For instance, the HR matters, the clean audit issues, and all of these things are issues of Program 1. So there has to be a correlation between performance of Program 1 and some of the other issues. What I can do, I can ask my colleague Neville Cheney to talk to the FLISP matter. There was a question about FLISP, whether it includes the private part. I'll ask the private investors, or it's only FLISP. But the issue is that FLISP is used to leverage private funding, but I'll ask Neville to talk to that later.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, just to cover the issue around the title deeds, I think as the national department, we've taken that quite seriously. In fact, we now have a national steering committee that manages it, and the acting DG has delegated myself. So one of the things that we concede is that the provinces haven't done enough because there's been issues there. We concede the issue that one of the things we've observed is that if you look at what happened last year, in fact, the title deed backlog has been increasing. What we have done is, and we can come back and give you, we did commit, Chair, and I think what we need to just do is indicate that we'll give a comprehensive picture, because what we've done is we've done a cleanup The one issue which we can indicate that the problem doesn't lie with the DA's office, it doesn't lie with the DA's, it lies with us. And we must consider that we're not doing enough, so we shouldn't apportion blame where it isn't. And I think we've had that. So that now is a national program, particularly in relation to that. In relation to the PLIS, in relation to the MTSF, remember that one of the things that we looked at, and I think it's important to note, particularly in the metros, we correctly, we're the Department of Human Settlements, not only for poor households, but we're the Department of Human Settlements and Housing for everyone, with an emphasis and a focus on poor households. And I think that's an important issue. The point that we need to understand is, particularly given the fact that in relation to the metros and where there's MIG or USCG, it impacts on every household. Whether you live in a poor household, a middle income, or a high income, there is some government or state money that goes through that, either through bulk or link infrastructure. It impacts on a household. So the first issue is that we contribute a percentage to private sector, and there's that funding mix that occurs. And I think that when you come back in relation to the outcome 8, you'll see that. But what we take the point from Member Mumezi that we must not conflate the figures so we don't double count. And I think that's the important thing, that we don't mislead on that. Chair, I think it was just the issue around the suspensions. I think it's just an issue. Yes, there were 2 staff members, but Minister and Acting DG have reinstated, so we don't have. I mean, that matter has been corrected. And there are processes to resolve how that issue is. So as we sit here now, we can indicate that any suspensions, in fact, we don't have any at the moment that's on record, but the 2 that were recorded by the PSC, that's been resolved, so that's no longer applicable. It was in relation to inherited legacies, both by Minister and Acting DG. Chair, I think the one issue is around the commitment that you've made around the 1.5 million, we've not revised that target. Until such time, there's a commitment to make that target between ourselves and the private sector, so we haven't resolved it. And I think the issue is that what we can indicate is, and I think from my side and Mr. Mengu's point, is that there is an action plan. And I think what we'll do is that as part of the quarterly reports, we'll indicate the audit action plan in relation to the 2014. So that will give you an indication of what the progress is in relation to the department undertaking. So we'll include that as a specific issue in the quarterly report. Thanks, Chair. I don't know if there's any issues there.
The 2 officials, I don't want them to come across as if we're brushing it aside. The question is, what took so long? Why 400 days? And I think that's what PSC is raising. I think there we had 2 cases. We had a case within a case. The incumbent challenged the suspension. There were charges that were leveled against the head of corporate services and challenged the process. And that process took forever before the actual case could start. In fact, we spent a lot of time debating whether the suspension was procedural or not. And that part, the incumbent lost that part. But we were about to start on the real charges now, where we realize that we can manage that part differently. After we have gained some new information, we then took a different approach. But the delay was not so much about whether we were efficient or not. I think there was a long battle to deal with the suspension alone before you get to the real case. But again, it was long, and we don't want to come across as if we are spinning this. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I'm sure. No more additions?
No.
We're done. We're fine. Some of those things will be follow-ups of the meetings. I know, Dr. Sokopo, you will have to come and brief us on the progress on the policy. Thank you very much from the department for that intervention. And as we wind up, just don't forget to submit those disclosure forms to the PSC, because that's one thing that came up very sharply, that you are not submitting the disclosure forms 3 years in a row. 3 years in a row. And that speaks to, like, you, okay, without going into details, but please correct that. We don't want to hear that anymore. But otherwise, we wind up now this part of the discussion. We also are aware, acting DG and DPG and the senior management, maybe you will tell us at some point what happened to the bursary scheme for the, we were supposed to be at school a long time ago, and we still don't know what happened. Maybe you will tell us at some point what happened. We don't want you to respond to that now, but you came to us, you presented, you made it like it's a done deal, but you are still here, not studying. So anyway, thank you very much for this interaction. And tomorrow the venue is at V475, where we will be interacting with the entities. We really would love to see all of you there. And the meeting is now seriously adjourned. Thank you very much.